Thank you very much for the joining with us in this CCNSO, GNSO lunch that we usually have.
And this is the operator. I'm just going to start the recording. One second.
Yes, please. I'm so sorry. I forgot to tell you. Thanks. Please, do start.
Take your partners.
Please go ahead. The recording is now being. The call is now being recorded.
Thank you very much, operator. Thanks so much. Okay. Thanks again for joining us. And we have we the GNSO have prepared some topics that we would like to exchange some ideas with you. We have only 1 hour time, so we are aware that it's not a long time to talk a lot, but we would like to let them know which are they, and perhaps you have some questions or issues that you would like to discuss with the GNSO. We have only 1 hour, but then after this meeting, if you have other further issues that you would like to keep on discussing, just feel free to, and we will find let us know that, and we will find a way to keep on dialoguing. So, if I may, Chris, you want to say something? No? Okay. If I may, I will find my mail with all the issues. Of course, it's closed. 1 second, please. Here. Okay. One of the things that the CCNSO has been doing is promoting and participating in cross-community working groups. Some of them has gave successful results and outcomes, and this is one of the topics that was already agreed in between Chuck and Chris to be one of the discussions that we may have today. We would like to know from the CCNSO perspective if there are limitations for you guys being part of the CCNSO in participating in this work, this cross-community working groups. How do you foresee them? If you see them as a process that could be started before that an issue is raised and is relevant for the community and for the different supporting organizations and advisor committees, or if you have other ideas. And I forgot to tell you that me and Stefan, we are chairing this meeting because Chuck, our chair, he's sick. He's in the hospital. He's getting better, but he has to go through a medical process and a surgery. So unfortunately, since Friday, he hasn't been able to join us for the meeting. So this is why we are doing this with you today. Chris, would you like to say something?
Yeah. Thank you, Olga. I'll just start trying to respond to your questions, and then we'll see if others want to chip in. I guess for us, there's a natural affiliation or closeness with the GAC, because for every CCTLD manager, there is a government, and in many cases, that government comes to ICANN. So there's a natural mix there. Most of us as CCTLD managers, deal with our governments every day in one way or another. So for us, when we are working on things, we try to involve the GAC as much as we can. We're cognizant of the fact that the GAC has difficulty sometimes in adapting and adopting other people's processes. But nonetheless, we work pretty hard at that. And most of our experience on the cross-constituency work has been with the GAC, the fast track being the most obvious example. With the fast track, what we did was we had full GAC participation, full CCNSO participation, and then we had reps from the GNSO and the ALAC involved as well. We also, taking that model a little bit further, we promoted the joint working group on security stability, which has now There is now a draft charter, and hopefully the G's and the C's and the ALAC and everybody will approve the charter in their own ways at this meeting, and then that working group can be set up. And I think that that will actually be the first real joint working group ever, in the sense that it will be chartered by the two supporting organisations. And actually the three, because I think the ASO as well, and then we'll also have advisory committee representatives on it. And I think that clearly demonstrates that there are issues where a complete community involvement is necessary. If you go back and look at the GNSO policy development process on new GTLDs, would it have been useful if there had been a greater involvement of the CCTLD community? Possibly. Certainly from the point of view of the issue of country names, which is an issue for us as well as being an issue for the GAC. And it may be that that processes could be put in place for pre-discussions, although I'm conscious that the last thing we want to do is to slow this stuff down. It may be in the future that it is sensible for each of the SOs and ACs to ask themselves the question at the very beginning of every major issue they deal with: is this something we should talk to the others about? Are there aspects of this where their input at an early stage would be valuable? And if the answer to that is yes, then obviously we should find mechanisms to do that. The other point I would make is that we do have liaisons, and I think we underuse them. I think that the liaisons really should be specifically tasked with thinking constantly about whether the organisation that they are liaising from could usefully provide input to the organisation they are liaising to. And I also think, just to finish off, the GAC is also, I think, coming to this conclusion now. They realise that they cannot operate in a silo, that it's critically important that they get stuff in early at the joint GAC Accountability and Transparency Review Team meeting yesterday. There was a suggestion floated, that there might be an agreed process where, at very early stages in our formal processes, there's actually a formal outreach, if you will, to the GAC on certain issues and to seek their input. Having said that, and that doesn't in any way decrease the value of having their involvement in stuff, even if they can't speak for the GAC, you tend to get input from the individuals, which is useful, providing useful signposts as to what issues may be in the future for the GAC. So how about anyone else want to chime in? Youngham?
There's another cross-constituency working group on IDNs. Yes, and although I haven't been working in the group as much as I should have, I've been following it fairly closely and see that Edward and Jiang, both from each of the groups, are able to lead the group in such a way as to have us feel that there is a much more of a consensus mechanism that's working, instead of it being just a CC effort or a G effort. I think that's one area that really worked.
Leslie?
Thanks, Chris. I was just going to make a point that the cross-constituency groups may not necessarily be in order to develop policy. They may be also about sharing, for example, technical developments and issues. Particularly given with the new Gs, there's going to be quite a bit of crossover between registry operators, I suspect. So there may actually be an opportunity, not necessarily to develop policy, but for greater sharing of information and developments as well.
Thank you. That's just reminded me of another point, which is more of a sort of process issue, something to be aware of. In the charter drafting group for the security and stability thing, it's very hard to... you can't have a circumstance where one SO's rules rule the charter. Our rules tend to be more relaxed than yours because you have your two houses and a whole heap of other things and concerns about representation and so on and so forth, and I quite understand that. The point I would make is that whilst you can use those for making selections to the working group, you should remember that where this is a cross ICANN working group, it needs probably more flexibility perhaps than your very, very, very defined rules would allow for if we used those rules for the actual joint working group. And given that any output from a joint working group has to go back to each of the SOs anyway and has to go through the process with them anyway, it ought not to be too much of a challenge to have a bit of flexibility in the actual joint working group itself.
Stefan.
Chris, what kind of flexibility are you talking about?
Oh, well, I mean, it's things like, and I'm not saying these are not necessarily acceptable. I'm just using them as examples. You have, for example, declaration of interest provisions and things like that, which are meaningless to us because we don't have any reason to do that. And again, I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just saying sometimes it's challenging when you're trying to put together a joint working group to try and ram it into one SO's way of doing things. So a little bit of flexibility, and there was flexibility on the security one, but I just wanted to reinforce that point because it is important that each SO doesn't just sit there and say, well, if we're going to do this, we have to do it our way. There's actually a third way, and that's a joint way.
Any comments from GNSO council members? Just for letting you know that we are still also discussing this inside our own council, and we are analyzing the advantages and disadvantages. We find value in this joint effort, but we still have to think about how to really organize our work and or when is the right moment to use this cross-constituency working groups. Do we have other comments from members or from you, Stefan? Chris, do you want to add something?
Only to say that I would... it's obviously a matter of issues. So clearly, joint working groups with one SO or all of them, all of us together, are issue driven. There's not a whole heap of point of having one for the sake of it. But I would encourage you to think of it in a positive way as, how can I put this? It's much harder for the board to resist the GAC and the CCNSO together than it is to resist the GAC or the CCNSO. It's much harder to resist the whole community coming and saying X. X is probably not a good... coming and saying Z or Z than it is to resist one. So there are political advantages as well to having cross groups.
Thank you, Chris. I would like to ask you a question. You said that we have liaisons. Who is... just one comment. You said we have liaisons, and I think you're right that maybe we should use those liaisons in a better way. Do you have some idea that you could share with us? I am the liaison for you, so yes.
Only that. I'm not 100% certain that we or the liaisons are clear what their role is, and one role And it's not just to turn up, right? I mean, one role is to be the bringer of information back with opinion as well as just fact, to say, and this is something that maybe we should be involved in. It's because it's very hard for you, if you're not there, to get the essence of it, so whatever it might be, and for us, for you. So it would be great if our liaisons were able to come back and report formally and say, and I think this is something that the C's or the G's should be involved in.
I'd just like to make the comment that it's not just with as a working group or a cross-constituency working group that we can work together. For example, our joint council meetings that we've been having since a couple years ago really makes us feel more like us rather than the CCs versus or the Gs. And so I think that was one example. And the other excellent example was when with the DNS cert, when the three chairs of the SOs and AC made a joint sent a joint letter to the president.
Adrian.
Yes, thanks. Adrian Kitteris from the Registrar constituency. I think that there is, you know, just adding to the conversation here and picking up on something Chris said earlier, is about really understanding, you know, whether what I took from what Chris said, really understanding whether there is something to say, whether it's relevant to you. And I think that's in the establishment of the working group, I think it needs to be made very clear as to what each particular, I'll use the word stakeholder, but use it badly, invested interest, whether it's the CCNSO or the GNSO or whatever other groups may, why they need to be involved in this particular issue. Because I think otherwise, it may be that this becomes the default method. And just concerned about bandwidth issues, especially, from our perspective within the GNSO and how much volunteer time is available, if this becomes the default player, then often find the GNSO gets dragged into something that potentially we may not want to even have an opinion on. We can read the report when it's complete. So just putting it that I think that so long as it's concise and the approach is correct in the formation of the working groups, then I think it's okay. But I would also hate for this to become the default method by which each group does its work, because I think there's a lot to be said about allowing us to provide our expertise with where we are and providing that report as we do now.
I think that's right, but I would just to clarify, there's a lot that can be done outside of policy development. I'm talking about stuff where you can do pre-work, the C's do far less policy development stuff than the G's do, because there is a very, very narrow band of policy that is global for C's. So for us, a lot of the stuff that we do is all about guidelines and that sort of thing. And that's really the area, more of the area that I'm talking about. With the policy development process, we're stuck with the bylaws anyway. So we can only do what we can do under the bylaws, and so be it. But certainly I think, there will be issues that come along over time where, with the new GTLD process, once it's up and running, there'll be stuff that happens where it might be that input from CC managers, as CC managers, because nothing to do with politics, just as managers, might be valuable. And I'm sure the reverse applies. So that's, I'm not talking about a default mechanism at all, and certainly not from a policy point of view.
Thank you, Chris. We have Tim.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Chris. I appreciate that. And because I think that given what we've seen that these groups have been used for so far, I think there'll be situations where the output of that group may need to come back to one of the SOs or ACs. So in some cases, it may need to come back to the generic supporting organization. In cases, it could be the CCNSO, depending on what the subject matter is that the group is called to meet. But I think we should be cautious about groups that we pull together that when they're done, they communicate directly with the board. And so I just put that caution out there. Thanks.
Oh, that's absolutely right. I mean, I think they shouldn't be doing that, except in exceptional circumstances. Excuse me. I also think, I mean, just popped into my head. On some of the management stuff that goes on, I imagine there may be a not insignificant amount of work duplication. I mean, I'm assuming, for example, that some of you are just as concerned about the timing issues with the strategic planning process as we are. Now, I'm not suggesting that, you know, we should suddenly get together and form a working group, but communication, you know, where you know, our liaison to you says, just so you know, the strategic and operational planning working group has written a letter to ICANN saying this. That starts to inform the cross communication between the two SOs, and I think that's actually probably more useful initially, because you'd be able, we can leverage off each other, in the sense that if you know that we're upset about something and you're upset about the same thing, as I said, that's more powerful.
Adrian.
Excuse my naivety.
Don't worry, mate.
Thanks. It's the first time I've ever said that. Do you have do you publish minutes of, or how often does the CCNSO meet, and do you publish your minutes?
Yes, we do, and we meet. Generally speaking, we have a council call every month. When the recordings are available, the recordings are obviously, apart from the logistical nightmare, the recordings are much more informative than the minutes. That's just the way of the world. But we do, and we've got your observer on our council calls, Han Chuan, and
My question, therefore, in asking that was, potentially that should be enough for us, and I would wonder if we're not using that now, and me as a councillor have never ever referred to your minutes, that potentially we should. I'm saying there may be mechanisms in place now that enables us to achieve the same result, which is to get an understanding of what goes on. We already have liaisons, as we've said, but if councillors, before we went to respond to, you know, a topic that you said we may have in common, why aren't we, as a GNSO, you know, looking into your minutes and seeing, you know, what you've got there? That's my point.
Me as liaison, what I do, I try to participate in all the calls that I can. Sometimes it's conflicting with other calls that we have in GNSO. We have many. I read the minutes on the MP3, and that's maybe my mistake. I try to extract what I think it's relevant for the GNSO. So perhaps what could be useful is just 2 or 3 minutes sharing some ideas with leaders of the CNSO and tell her, Olga, we think that this and this could be relevant. Maybe that adds something to my vision. And then I share it with our list. This is what I usually do, to avoid you going through the minutes and listening to all the material, which is online, but it's a lot of time.
Adrian, I think my response to you would be yes, but the only way to do this sufficiently and effectively is to rely on a number of tools rather than just one. So yes, there are minutes. Yes, the liaisons should be extracting relevant information. This is probably a good time to also talk about the chair situation. I know you're going through a new chair process at the moment, and we will be doing that in San Francisco. What some of you I assume you will know that Chuck and I and Cheryl and Heather talk, and we talk totally off the record a fair bit to get a feel for what's going on and why. because that way it's easier to you can lead better because you know how things are going, and that puts flags up sometimes. Oh, that might be an issue for the GNSO, or that might be an issue for the GAC. That is something that I would massively encourage continues. It's really, really important. It's not formal. It's not recorded. It's just chat. Also, we are hopefully with new GNSO chair and ALAC chair, we'll be able to reconstitute the ACSO slightly more formal committee, which was the chairs and vice chairs. And the last time we did that, it kind of started off really well, but then kind of got sidetracked by staffing issues and became quite complicated. But again, that is an opportunity for the sharing of information, and that is critically important that we do that. So one of the things that I want to see happen is for the board to be doing that as well, in a slightly different way. But the board needs to do that. So from my point of view, I think you need to take all the tools. I think the liaisons need to be charged up with, this is your job, and come back with information. The chairs need to talk often, and we just need to recognise stuff when it happens. It doesn't need to be a formal process. We just need to recognise stuff and say, you know what, it would be really useful to get an opinion on that.
Stefan.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea that you as chairs talk and in an informal capacity. I think that.
I'm so sorry. Is that Alan?
I'm so sorry, Alan.
Do you
want
to go? But I think we have to stay mindful of the fact that when we're talking in cross community groups, for us as GNSO, we may be walking a tight line in some cases because, we never really know what to expect from the outcome, basically. So if we're in a situation where it's just conversation, people getting together and thrashing issues, that's fine. If it becomes something that can be forwarded to the board, people have said this already, and may look like policy, even though it isn't, then we as GNSO members may be in a difficult situation.
Alan, so sorry. Apologies.
As a liaison, I'm normally treated very well in the GNSO. I guess I would like to support a lot of what Chris has said, and when I first put up my hand, there was less, but he said more since then that I support. A really proactive liaison who does not get too annoying on either side can be very effective, I think. And some of it's formal, some of it's informal, but I think it enables the groups to support each other even when there is no formal cross-working group and things like that. The concept of the cross-working groups, despite the fact that some of you may know the most recent GNSO ALAC GAC one was not particularly well received by the board. It's the one on morality and public order. But we seem to have gotten their attention at this meeting, on the other hand. I think the issue of multiple groups hitting the board or hitting someone over the head together is really important. There's a second aspect to it also, though, that if people work on a cross-community working group, they get to know some of the people on the other side. And the informal relationships that are developed and respect that is developed may well be as important or more important than the formal relationships. And I think it becomes invaluable. I think everyone in ICANN is realizing, and maybe even the board will soon, that people need to talk to each other if we're going to do effective things.
I thank you, Alan. Just as a simple example, you guys have got a whole new process here which we could learn from. I'm really liking this name thing. This is great. We could have CCNSO should have badges, Leslie, I think, don't you? We should have name things for everybody.
Am I badge in chief now?
I think you're right. Look, speaking entirely personally, it is I completely recognise it is harder for you guys than it is for us, because we are all CCTLD managers. We might not necessarily agree with each other, but we all come from exactly the same space. It is much harder for you. you've got registries and registrars and users and God knows what else, and it's really hard, and I understand that the trust levels are harder to establish. So completely accept all of that, and I still think working within those confines, we can do some good stuff.
Thank you, Hab. Jamie.
First, I would like to subscribe everything that Alan says. I see the importance of this informal get together, but I have one doubt that I shared yesterday in the GAC and GNSO meeting, and I don't know that if what happened in this very successful recommendation 6 or MAPO, as you want, working group, if it was a time sensitive issue, and this is why this cross-community working group was put together. And well, it did well, okay, but I don't know if a cross-community working group cutting directly to reporting directly to the board is the best way to deal with time sensitive issues. I don't know if maybe the formal bodies should take a stand and to pass through them these decisions, I think, and to take the time to discuss in each body. I think it is invaluable. So although I admit that both things should live together, there is a feeble divide between creating a short circuit in our decision bodies.
Thank you, Jamie. If we don't have further comments, okay, John, please.
I was just curious, as more of the country codes are licensed for general purpose, will that begin to put some stress on your your uniformity and approach?
Oh, if I gave you the impression that there was uniformity, then I apologize for that.
Apology accepted.
No, I don't think so. I mean, we generally, if a CCTLD is managed in a slightly in a generic sense, or a more generic, rather than just being for the for the nation itself, they're still effectively bound by the same rules that we are. They're still bound by the same requirements of the bylaws and so on. So no, I don't. And just to stress, I'm not suggesting that we're uniform. We disagree on lots of things, but the point I was trying to make is we come from a level playing field, in the sense that we're all doing the same thing, and you don't.
Thank you, Chris. I don't see other hands. So if you allow me, we would like to have some feedback from the CCNSO about the fast track. If you could give us some idea of how many applications you had, how many approved, how many went to IANA, how many launch IDEA and CCTLDs, that would be very interesting for the GNSO.
Do you want to say something first, Jiangam?
Just a procedural question. Do we have a list of topics that we would like to discuss?
Well, basically, this is one, and then Edmund did a presentation for the GNSO the other day. Maybe he would like to address some of that content. I don't know if we have the time, and also maybe Andre want to add something. They are our CCIDN experts in the group.
So, Jiangam, the answer is that Chuck and I agreed that we would discuss the cross-constituency workshop thingy at this particular meeting, and then Stefan sent me a note saying, if we have time, can we talk about some other stuff as well? And I said, sure, we can talk about whatever you like. It does, you know, we're happy to talk about almost anything. So, on the IDN fast track, the answer to your question is I don't know. We're not involved really. Once it's, you know, it's now a process, and it's processed by staff, and we have nothing really much to do with it, unless there is an issue arises that somebody wants to come and talk to us about. However, I believe that Tina is doing an update report this afternoon in the main room. A full discussion on the fast track. Jess.
Yeah, I will say also, I think, unless I'm dreaming, I think this morning in the president's report, I think Rod did go through all of those statistics, how many applications they got, how many were approved, how many are in the route.
I may well have been dreaming during that part of it.
Yeah, that was part of the one, I think that was in English, so I think I paid attention to that.
Yeah. So, but as far as we know, and I mean, if there are IDN people in the room, they can speak for themselves, but as far as we know, it's basically going okay. There are a number of issues with governments perhaps not necessarily understanding the process very well. It could perhaps be explained better. There are some issues with evidencing internet, local internet support, local community support, and stuff like that. But from the get putting your application in and coming out at the other end, pretty much everything seems to be running fine. There are, I know, a couple of, I'm not going to talk about them because it's not appropriate, but there are a couple of stalled ones that are having problems because of the technical committee's report saying that they are problematic strings. And again, that is something that they are dealing with directly with ICANN. So that's where we are, and I think it's slowing down now. I mean, I think there are still some to come, but it's not, the rush is off.
Jeff,
so how is the progress going on? You know, that was a fast track, so you have a PDP underway right now, I guess. How is that coming along?
That's split into two sections. There's the pure policy side, which is what are the rules going to be, and then there's CCNSO admin stuff, because we have changed. We now have two registries in one country, so we have to figure out a way of dealing with that from a membership bylaws point of view. So those two things are going on at the same time. They're both progressing reasonably well. In fact, faster than I thought they would. From the point of view of the policy, that's pretty good. We've got our sticking point, if you like, or the area where we're going to have to do the largest amount of work is the variant situation. I'm still, even after all this time, have absolutely no idea what a variant is. I can give you lots of examples of things that could be variants, but I have no idea whether they actually are or not. And I think pretty much everyone else is in the same boat, really. So it's pretty hard. But everything else is coming along well. And I can't give you a finishing date. I don't know. Bart, would you be prepared to? No, didn't think so.
Any other comments from GNSO members? Edmund, Andre, you want to add something? No.
Then we can move on to something we talk about and what maybe want to bring up. Actually, I think it's somewhat related to the community cross-community working group discussion that we have. I think, Chris, you mentioned that if we can identify items earlier on, this might be one of them. The GNSO and the SSAC sort of created a working group on internationalized registration data. The reason why it's not called WHOIS is because of we want to focus on internationalized registration data, whether it's WHOIS or not. So there's been discussion about the working group was formed. There's the we have been going on discussion about in an IDN environment, both in terms of the IDN itself, variants, name servers that may be IDNs, as well as contact information, registration data that would be internationalized. And we're putting together sort of requirements and sort of what policy should be put in place, which might impact technically future who is directory services, and perhaps this is one of the things. I know that some of the CC already participate in the group, but I think you know this might be something that would be of interest to for CCNSO to join as well. But
so, Edmund, just so that we're clear, are you talking about data in the IANA database, or are you talking about who is?
I am talking about who is, and that, you know, in a way, it includes the IANA who is, right? Because it's also the IANA who is also is available on
sure.
port 43.
So the distinction I make the distinction for what I hope are obvious reasons in respect to the IANA database, then that is obviously something that we are interested in. The mysterious change some years ago for the description of manager to sponsoring organization is something that even after all these years still drives every single CCTLD manager insane. But in respect to who is, that is really completely in country in every case. We all have totally different rules. I mean, there will be countries that have the same rules, but everyone is different, really. And Australia has a different set of criteria to the UK and the Netherlands. So that is not. And discussing what happens in our who is not, for example, is not a discussion that we would have. We're happy to provide input. But actually discussing a policy that would affect our who is way outside of what we could do, because in fact certainly in our case it's something that the government takes a fair amount of interest in, as of course to law enforcement and so on. So on the IANA side, absolutely, but on the who is side, probably not.
Yeah, I'm pretty. I understand that situation very 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 well, and I guess the reason why I think it would be interested to bring it up, and I'll let Andre speak more to it as well. There are a number of things that are being discussed that may ultimately have technical implications, where you know it becomes a requirements for IETF to do more work on it, and then it comes back to a situation. Of course, each CCTLD has their own policies and stuff, but I think as in terms of identifying things early, both the input in terms of the experience and the limitations and all those kind of things would be useful. But some of the things that are being said, it's not necessarily so much policy of what, in a way, like or privacy or whatever, but in the way data is presented and collected and what types of data. And one of the things is we would like to have sort of like a, if you will, a more comprehensive set. And I think the CCs would would probably be able to provide more information on that. So I think that would be good.
Andre, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Edmund, thank you for being such a politically correct. Let me put it like this. Since we all want a single internet, the who is data, regardless of the policies of individual countries, must be kind of similar. between different organizations, because that's the basics of the internet, and this is RFCs, and these are requirements for the people who register domains to put their contacts, their data, and this work group works basically trying to achieve some new recommendations on using the international data written is not in the Latin scripts, basically.
No, I understand.
And there should be, there can be different ways, like references to the, you know, third party applications, translation services. It's a whole set of interesting new fresh requirements, because we're all facing now that internet is not ASCII based anymore, for, by the way, for many years already, except the address system, which is just started. So I think the participation, at least on the level of exchanging of the information between you know, CC TLD world and the GTLD world, is very, very important.
I have Becky. No? Okay, Leslie.
There are some things on which we'll agree, and there are some things on which we will disagree, I'm sure, and I suspect that UK and many other CCs would fight tooth and nail for local policy to be determined locally, because that's how we do policy. There is only a very limited set of policy that should be globally and agreed through the ICANN process for us. Also, of course, there are local and regional laws in my own country. We're affected by the European legislation on data as well in that area.
And Becky's changed her mind.
I didn't realize we were going here. I just think it is, even if it is an RFC, it is important to keep in mind that it's not just Europe, but there are laws all over the world that limit the kind of personal data, what kind of personal data you can use in what kinds of ways. And it's relatively varied from country to country, including within the European Union. So, you know, there's an exception for required by law, but RFCs have never been considered laws.
Yeah, I'd say it might come as a shock, but law trumps an RFC every time. Yes.
I should say that in our case in Russia, the people who actually wrote the data protection regulation took the European experience and made it worse.
Do we have Edmund, please?
Yeah, so just to try to wrap things a little bit, it's really not, sometimes it's not so much about ultimately what's presented at the WHO is, but you know, it's as much about how what types of data is collected in what format. So that's what the group is deliberating about. So that is, there are certain elements I believe are relatively universal. And what types, like for example, in IDN, the two that the ACE label and the U label are could be you know, interchangeably used. This is something that might be of use for any type of who is that manages that has IDN. So there are elements of which that is not that is not where. Local policies, there are specific to local policies. So that's sort of what I mean. And I think we went through sort of some of this discussion in the IDN discussion as well. And I think the what I think would be useful might be to try to identify those that are of common interest. Again, you know, those are some of the things that might be useful going forward. If this is an area of interest for CCNO, so to pick up. Again, I do note that already some CCs are participating in the group, but you know, as in terms of identifying items that might be of later stage of interest for a joint effort, this might be one of them.
Thank you. Any other comments? Okay, me as liaison, I will take the task. Oh, Adrian, just let me. Oh, sure. Just I promise I'll maybe exchange some emails with Bart and Chris after each conference call. So maybe we grab some important things that you think are relevant for GNSO. Adrian, please.
Given that CC. TLD operators may well be soon GTLD operators. That's a fact. Registry operators. And notwithstanding that fact, just as a group, we had an interesting conversation with the GAC yesterday, and they asked us about new GTLDs, clearly, because of with the GNSO. But I was just interested, while we had some time, if we do, and does the CCNSO have a position, a comment, or even just a gut feel on what they consider for the GNSO program, new GTLD program?
In what context?
As far as it being ready to roll, are there any major concerns that are coming across your way from your stakeholders?
Okay. You're asking for a comment on where we think the process is at.
Cool.
Because I was going to say that we actually have an ultimate goal, which is for every CCTLD to run at least one GTLD, so we can come in and take you over.
Right.
look around, who's laughing? Yeah, funny. Can't think why. I can only speak for myself, obviously, but I think that from a CC point of view, we still have an issue with the country name scenario. There are varying degrees of concern about it in amongst CCs, but there's a fundamental concern with pretty much everyone. The concern is around striking the balance in a way that ensures protection, and the issue is complicated by the politics of governments entering into an objection process, and even more complicated by the concept of governments paying. I'll give you one example. Tibet, I would suggest, would be fairly challenging. If somebody applies for .Tibet, the current scenario envisages that the Chinese government, presumably, would object and pay. That isn't going to happen. They would not. There are political consequences for them of buying into a process like this, and it's going to be very hard they may find ways around it. They may try and get someone else to object or whatever, but fundamentally they simply won't object. They cannot involve themselves in that process, and they certainly wouldn't pay. I'm not saying that's fair, I'm just saying it is. And that sort of thing is currently not covered, and that's very, very challenging. And one of the reasons why you're getting pushback, or such heavy pushback, on this issue is because of things like that. Other than that, I think we're probably okay. The CCs are probably okay with pretty much everything else. Personally, I think if you are sitting here seething at Larry Strickling's letter, you should actually turn that around and treat it as a positive, not a negative. I think actually the economic study is now, as far as I know, has now been published. Now, whether that's satisfactory or not, of course, is entirely another issue, and I wouldn't dare comment on that. But from the point of view of the question on vertical integration, whether you agree or disagree with the decision, I think the point he made in the letter is a very valid point, which is that no one has the foggiest idea, as far as I know, how the board got from the position that they declared in Nairobi to the position that they declared 3 weeks ago. And one of the things that the ATRT is saying very, very loudly in its recommendations is you have to explain stuff. If you don't explain stuff, no one knows what's going on. So apart from those two things, I think we're probably okay. But I think anyone else on the CC side want to weigh in with a politically incorrect comment or two?
I was going to do a joke and say, on behalf of the GNSO, we are all in support of the program and want to move forward, but that would be seen as a joke for me, but then Christine Rosette would punch me in the face. So I won't do that joke.
Yeah, thanks. Christine, would you like just to punch him anyway? Just be much more fun that way, don't you think?
You know, this is the new peaceful GNSO, so yeah. No, I'll pass.
Oh, dear.
Any other comments? Any other topics that GNSO would like to raise or comment? CC questions to GNSO.
How do you think it's going? Okay, start in this corner and work your way around the room.
I have a question on another point, and I think we saw this in the Recommendation 6 Cross-Community Working Group. I think we've seen it in other parts of the new GTLD process and in other issues. And I think what I'm talking about is that in some cases there seems to be a lack of understanding throughout the community as to kind of how the CCNSO works, how the GAC works, kind of a CCNSO 101 GAC 101, and I was wondering whether you all have ever given any thought to perhaps at a meeting having a short, you know, 30-minute session on kind of this is who we are, this is how we do things, this is what you have to kind of keep in mind about certain issues that you may want us to weigh in on, et cetera. And I think something like that from both the CCNSO side as well as from the GAC would be very helpful, thinking in particular of the point that you've just made about the Dot Tibet, because for example, a key kind of aspect of this objection process has been this underlying, what I've always thought was an incorrect assumption that national governments would, in fact, be willing to participate in this objection process. And I think that would be helpful to make sure that everybody has the same base knowledge and that to the extent that misunderstandings are kind of perpetuated in some of this work, it would avoid that.
Hey, that's fine. I'd ask the other way around as well, and the GNSO does a 10, perhaps in your case a 201, of how it works. And yeah, why don't we see if we can't organise that in where are we going? San Francisco. Why not? I mean, hey, you know, why not? I just wanted to pick up just to make a little point of response to your thing about government subjecting and stuff. And again, maybe this is an example of knowledge and communication that doesn't always happen. When we were putting the fast track together, there were attempts made to mandate payment. Now, I know that CC is making contributions as a separate issue, but talking specifically about that, and whether you agree or disagree with it, and I actually disagree with it, the flat response from some governments is we are prohibited by law from making this sort of a payment. We cannot do it. And we might be able to try and find some twisty ways around it, but fundamentally we just cannot do it. And that comes from territories territories and countries who are perhaps not running on the same system as we are, as Australia is or the UK or the States. But it's there and it's real, and it means that they literally can't do it. Then you go to the cultural issues, and you've got to get over so many hurdles. In some cultures, the concept that a government would go to a California corporation to object to something and have to pay is massively outside of their paradigm. They just don't get it. And we're coming across this ourselves because, from the point of view of delegations, for some countries, the concept that they would have to provide evidence of local internet community support, they don't even have a process for figuring out how to do that, because in their country, if the king says it happens, it happens. So it's not as if they don't... It's not even that they're being difficult. They just don't even have any way of doing it. So that sort of level stuff is what you're dealing with here, and it's really, really hard to overcome.
Edmund.
I was just going to ask something, but are we supposed to end at 1:30 or 2? At 2, so we do still have time, okay.
Until 2, right, yeah.
That's good then. So just following up on actually what Adrian asked and Chris, you mentioned the issue of governments objecting Now, of course, Tibet, that's assuming that it's not the Chinese government that applies for it, then that wouldn't be a problem. But, so is the CCNSO...
Well, hold on, just hang on, whoa. Maybe it would.
Maybe it would.
I mean, all I'm saying, we could have objections coming in from
India.
From India, yeah.
Okay, so I guess the question is the CCNSO considering any response to that, or because you brought it up in that context, and if so, what's the?
We've written, I've lost count now of how many times we've written to the board about this issue, and pretty much the GAC and the CCs agree. There are slight differences in focus, but we pretty much agree. And all we've said is our starting point really is for this round, because we're still doing our own policy development process on IDNs. So for this round, then there should be a reserve list is a really tough thing, and I'm not really saying it. There should be a reserve list, but certainly there should be a block. We say on meaningful representations of territories. I mean, if you ask the Australian government as an example, if Tourism New South Wales decided to apply for .Aussie as a GTLD, the federal government probably wouldn't be particularly happy about it, and they would probably object because they don't have quite the same difficulty with an objection process. But what they would much rather is that there was an agreement that meaningful representations were for now out of the game. And I don't think anybody would argue that Aussie is a meaningful representation of Australia. And I accept that it's a wedge. I accept that it gets harder and harder because there's more and more things. But if you take Rolf's sitting over there, if you take Holland as an example, I mean, the Netherlands is the Netherlands, but Holland is a term that certainly the Brits all use Holland and so on, and so do presumably people living in the Netherlands. But it's not on a list anywhere. So how do you deal with that? And again, if the Netherlands government was a government that has a problem with objection processes and paying money, then they're stuffed.
But in terms of territories, you're talking about something that corresponds to like the CCTLD, or you know, because you mentioned Tibet, that's why I felt it was an interesting question, because what you suggested may not cover that type of issue, and if it does cover that issue, then I have another type of worry, which is very connected to what I'm doing, which is, you know, that expands to, say Asia, where, you know, obviously we'd like to apply for IDN of .Asia, and, you know, that sort of slightly, you know, starts to move that direction, then...
Yeah, we could go... I mean, you can go up to world in the end, can't you? You know, who gets .Earth? Obviously the Americans, but leaving that aside.
Not the Chinese.
Yeah. I mean, I agree, and I'm not. I don't think there's any suggestion. I haven't heard any pushback on regions. I think there are people in regions who might be uncomfortable, but I haven't heard any pushback. No, I'm very specifically talking about meaningful names of countries or territories, That's the issue for us, and I think to answer your original question, we have been saying this for quite some considerable time now, and the board's response is make do with the mechanisms we have in place. And if you saw Heather's letter, the GAC's letter to Peter from a couple of weeks ago, it's pretty clear that the GAC's not happy about that. And I would suggest to you guys that it really is a case of figuring out. I'm not saying that we will get our way, but I am. Perhaps you might want to think about whether this issue is likely to be a cause of delay, and whether it really matters all that much to you. In this round.
I understand, but I just want to get a sense. You know, you raised the Tibet example, but what you're suggesting really doesn't try to solve that in a way. So you just use it as an example, right? And you in terms of the CCNSO position, is really focused on the country name, territory names, according to the.
Well, I would argue that Tibet fits into that. It's a country.
It's not on the ISO.
No, that's my point. It's not on the ISO list. Okay, so, but then neither is Holland. I'm not. I need to get really clear here. I'm using Tibet as an example to show you why there is a problem with the objection process. That's not the same thing as saying CCNSO thinks Tibet should be protected. That's not what I'm saying. So the Tibet example is an example of showing that there's a problem with the process. The Holland example is an example to show that there are names of countries that are meaningful that are not listed. Okay? And we're not asking for them to be... Sorry?
But it represents...
Yeah, it represents. It's a meaningful representation of the country. That's what I'm talking about. So, sorry, you are correct, Edmund. I wasn't suggesting that the Tibet issue was anything to do with that. It's to do with the money.
Tim wants to comment something.
Okay, so that would indicate, Chris, that we might have to think about living with the fact that the ISO list isn't going to cut it, and we may have, commonly used or commonly known as or something of that nature in order to kind of cover that, and whether giving that up is worth delaying this whole process for. I think that's a very good question. And yeah, I don't know if that would happen either, but I think that's a really good question. I'm not so sure it is. And same with the, whether governments need to pay for objections. I think that kind of falls in the same boat, and, we should think about maybe getting this round out, and as some of these things develop, we'll see how they go, and we'll know better next time around.
I'm really conscious that I'm not sitting here trying to convince you one thing or another. I'm just trying to be straightforward. And it strikes me that the current issue, one of the major issues you've got right now is with the GAC. With the GAC, certainly, is this country thing. And if you can find a way around that by widening the restriction, if you like, then I think that will just disappear, and that one goes. What does that leave? Apart from any things you're not happy about, what does that leave externally? The question on the economic thing is: does it do what people expect it to do? I have no idea. And the vertical integration issue, I think, is more of an explanation one. Apart from that, I don't have anything else.
Any other comments? Chris, you make a final comment, some conclusion?
No, I'm good. Thank you. It's great. And I think we should. Whoops. I think we should pick up on Christina's idea and do a 101.
So I'm thinking I now have a new item on my to-do list.
I think you might do.
Yeah.
But I think we'd be time is obviously an issue. Finding the time to do it is obviously challenging, but we could do this lunch. I mean, we could make the next lunch GNSO CCNSO 101 and do it that way. Fine with me, it'd be great.
Okay. Any other comments from GNSO members, CCNSO members? Okay, thank you very much, all of you, for sharing this conversation and dialogue, and I wish you a nice rest of the day. Thank you.